Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
That's the voice of the great Vin Scully, Hall of Fame broadcaster, who has passed away at the age of 94 after spending 67 years as part of Dodgers culture. We're going to break down everything that we can about his legacy, what he has meant to the sport, and everything else going on across the world today, as it is Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and we're going to make this day even more confusing because Barton Hahn isn't Barton Hahn today. It's Freddie and Fitz, but it's right. Not the Freddie and Fitz you see at night. It's really a commingling of Freddie Fitz. It's Freddie and other Fitz. Freddie Coleman, Jason Fitz. We're in for the guys, and we'll shamelessly plug that you should check out Spain and Fitz,
yes.
7 to 9 p.m., and then Freddie and Fitz Simmons, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Exactly. Everybody,
there will be a pop quiz later, yeah, Freddie.
And put it this way, if you don't pass the pop quiz, then shame on you for not knowing these things when it comes to ESPN Radio lineup. But you're exactly right in terms of shameless plugging. I don't like to call it shameless plugging. I like to call it creative announcements,
yeah,
and I like to call it that.
I'm going to steal that
know
from
about
you.
Our shows. Have at it.
Yeah, that's...
I haven't patented it yet, so have at it.
Notice Freddie said yet, because he's like an OG. I got all of this. I am out. Freddie's like quietly smarter than everybody in the room.
I don't know about that one.
I'm just saying.
I'm more like loudly dumber than anybody else.
I thought that was my role at ESPN. So obviously we've got a lot to get into today. We're going to get a lot of what's happening right now across the world of sports. But the big news that came last night is the passing of Vin Scully, an icon, somebody that, you know, I've never hidden from the fact that, Freddie, I'm not a huge baseball fanatic. Mm-hmm. I think it speaks to the fact that Vin Scully had incredible impact, because when I saw the news, it sort of takes your breath away. And it means that no matter what your favorite sport is, no matter what you love, if you grew up around any sport, you've heard the voice of Vin Scully and you understand the greatness.
My heart sank the same way when I found out Bill Russell passed away over the weekend. I mean, it's tough to lose icons in any sport, in any genre, Jason, but to lose two in a short amount of time, with Bill Russell passing away on Sunday at the age of 88, then Vin Scully, and I found out this information last night. I just gotten back from South Carolina, go upstairs to pack, I turn on SportsCenter, and I see that on the bottom line that Vin Scully passed away at the age of 94. And we always talk about a life well lived, and we know that is overkill when it comes to Vin Scully. But here's the one thing I want people to remember, whether you're a younger generation or older generation, we're not going to see a Vin Scully ever again. And you made the point before we got started today about somebody being associated with one team in one city for 67 years. There are plenty of people that are not associated with one team in one city for 6 or 7 years in this day and age when it comes to sports. The fact that young and old knew about Vin Scully inside and outside of Los Angeles, we're never going to see that again, especially in the world that we live in right now.
It's such a moment of impact. And, you know, I always said in the music business, I didn't do anything I ever did because I wanted to be rich or famous, thank God. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make impact. And I remember my first record, the first time I heard an orchestra on a record was November Rain, Guns N' Roses, right?
Nice.
I was sitting in the car with my mom and I was like, I want to do that someday. My mom was like, no, that's me. You're going to be a classical musician, whatever. When Matchbox 20 put out Mad Season and I'm on that orchestra and I heard my orchestra on that, I was like, man, I did that. Like, it was about trying to be that portion of a memory. I remember my first concert and I looked at Richie Sambora and I was like, my God, like, there's so much impact to that. When I got the chance to spend years on stage, when I didn't want to play a show, I'd think, man, there's some 11-year-old kid that's going to look up and say, that's so cool. It's about impact. And in our world, you think about, for me as a Raiders fan, Chris Berman, I remember running to my TV every Sunday night when I wasn't in a position earlier in life to be able to watch highlights. My shot at seeing what the Raiders did that day was to watch Berman and Jackson tell me about it, right? Like on NFL primetime. And it was the best 3 minutes of my Sunday. Like, that's what impact is about. And when you think about Vin Scully, to have that impact in the biggest moments of a franchise's history for so many generations, the fact that right now there are great-grandparents talking to their great-grandkids mm-hmm. about their favorite Vin Scully memories, that's staggering levels of impact that I don't know can be replicated in a society where everybody is constantly moving on and moving up.
Because more than ever before, especially, and you and I've talked about this, Jason, there's so many people part of short attention span theater. And there are plenty of people that don't want to be a part of that. They get dragged along being short attention span theater because you don't want to feel that the generation gap keeps getting wider and wider and wider, even though that's always been the case. It's always been a part of evolution. Older people want to make sure that they're not forgotten. Younger people don't have time for it. They want to move on. But there's certain people that should always really transfer past that, that should always be able to go beyond those kind of platforms. And to me, Vin Scully is that kind of person. Bill Russell is that kind of person. If, for example, Nichelle Nicholas, who we lost from Star Trek, was the first black woman to be on TV in that kind of position of power, part of Star Trek, and also having that interracial kiss that she had on screen with James Tiberius Kirk when it comes to, you know, Bill Shatner, William Shatner. People lost their minds in the southern part of the country and other parts of the country, but certain things have an impact that shouldn't just be limited to a generation. Vin Scully should not just be limited to an older generation. If you're a younger generation, you should see exactly the impact that he was able to have that still manifests itself with younger broadcasters who know about Vin Scully. Even people who may not be into broadcasting should know exactly what kind of person, not just broadcaster, what kind of person Vin Scully is always going to be.
One of the things that I think will help Vin Scully's legacy live forever is how much history matters to football or to baseball fans.
Sure.
As a Raiders fan, Greg Papa, was that like, is just hearing him go touchdown right over and over, like that I text that to my friends. When the Raiders score, I have a touchdown Raiders like text nice. That I send out to everybody because I want them to know I just saw that play.
Right.
But you think about in football, everything changes so quickly. How often right now are young football fans going back and watching a game from the 80s
They're
or
not.
Listening to a game from the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
Baseball loves its history. Mm-hmm. Baseball fanatics care about their history. So these moments, these were the Kirk Gibson call, like these moments are going to live on forever because baseball gives a damn about the past. And I think that's instead of arguing about the past the way NBA fanatics like to do.
Oh my goodness.
Baseball fans are in it for appreciating the past.
And they need to do a better job of that when it comes to Major League Baseball, not just the fans, Jason, but Major League Baseball as a whole, of understanding exactly why history matters so much in their sport and what makes its sport cool. I know I'm in the minority, literally, when it comes to a baseball fan in this day and age in the 21st century. Yeah, I said it, so what? Yeah, but it's true. But there are not too many people of color like me that are baseball fans, that grew up as baseball fans. It seems that a lot of us have drifted off, and I get it. We're in a football society. We're in a basketball society. We're really, when you think about it, in a soccer society with World Cup and MLS and everything, it seems that a lot of people of my skin aren't baseball fans like they used to be. So I'm always pumping up baseball because I don't want to see the sport go away. And I'm never going to allow somebody along the lines of Vin Scully to have his impact go away because he meant as much to me as, for example, growing up a New York Mets fan. Bob Murphy, you talk about catchphrase with Greg Pop and the Raiders. He always said when the Mets won, which wasn't a lot in the 70s, he said, and the Mets win. We'll be right back to happy recap. You mentioned that to any Mets fan from my generation, they know exactly what that is. So I'm not punishing younger generations for not knowing it. I'm punishing Major League Baseball. Embrace your history and let people know how it matters in the present and not just leave it in the past. And if somebody like Vin Scully, his passing, should be the perfect conduit for Major League Baseball to say, this is what has been cool about our sport. Somebody that was associated with a team in the city for 67 years, that you're never going to see that again. So embrace what you have now, because in the past, we've embraced that, but we can't forget about it, but can't forget about the present either.
You just sit back and think about storytelling. You know, I was talking to ESPN in Las Vegas a little while ago this morning, and they asked me if a storyteller came out today and was just talking while about baseball games going behind the scenes, would today's audience love it? And I think we all know the answer to that is no. It's not snappy enough. It's not catchy enough. I understand that. But I think that's part of the specialness, if that's a word, that needs to be continually retold about Vin Scully. Because when you start 67 years in the booth, you're talking about going through eras where at some point, many fans were only listening on radio, to an era where only the diehards are listening on radio.
Yeah.
And to get that crossover from everybody and to be a part of an era where, almost like Christmas Story, everybody's sitting around listening to it on the radio, to an era where there's only a couple of TV networks and your best way to check it out is on the radio, to an era where now you're listening in an app. Like, he resonates with all of those different audiences because of his particular set of skills.
It's hard to marry the past and the present, especially when it comes to broadcasting, because you hear about voices or you know about voices, but if they're not part of your system now, it's very easy to push them aside. Never mind the fact that you listen to any baseball game or watch any baseball game, you hear Vin Scully and everybody. You hear Vin Scully and Bob Wischusen, John Buchshambi, Joe Buck, Joe Davis, Melanie Newman, who does a great job with the Baltimore Orioles. You hear Vin Scully and all of them because that's who they grew up listening to. That's who they grew up watching. So that appreciation should always be there because there are plenty of Vin Scullys all around and so many broadcasters and not just in Major League Baseball.
Vin Scully obviously called Oral Hershiser games and the Dodger great and now analyst had this to say about the great legacy of Scully.
Very few people that are on the Mount Rushmore of a sport or all of sport that didn't play on the field. But Dodger fans know, and they voted him on the Mount Rushmore of Dodgers, even though he never played. He's right there with Jackie and Sandy and Kirsch and whoever else you want to put on that Mount Rushmore. So what he meant to the game of baseball is one thing. What he meant to Los Angeles and to the Dodger franchise in Brooklyn and here is a completely another thing. And I think one is a distant relationship that you know he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest. And the other one is a personal relationship that he was in your living room, in your radio, almost on a nightly basis. Baseball has seasons, and this is a hard season to go through, to be without him.
Wow.
Personal relationship in the living room. Like, that's, to me, what we do on ESPN Radio. The coolest thing about it is, over time, people get to know you, and you get to know people. Like, you get to actually relate to listeners. The thought that, you know, you hear Oral Hershiser get choked up about somebody that had that personal relationship for years because of his voice and passion for the game that he called, that's epic.
How much do you always hear people talk about family and, yo, we fam. We always fam. Vin Scully was always fam. And that is something that should never, ever be lost on his impact because you felt like you knew him because he made sure you were included and not excluded. He didn't put a story out there just to say, I can tell the story. He wanted you to be as excited about that as he was, and he did not mind sharing those kind of stories that he was so known for. In addition, be one of the maybe the best baseball broadcaster that baseball's ever seen.
We will continue to break down his legacy with experts and people in the know. But in the meantime, we are still sort of trying to process the information that came out of Miami yesterday. And there's one person that seems to be getting away without any blame, and I'm not sure it's right. We'll break it down next. But first, Freddie's got to tell you about Vivid Seats.
And don't forget about 2022 baseball season continue to be in full swing now that we're in August. And you can be there to catch all the action live with Vivid Seats. Get out to the ball. Park and experience every home run, every web gym, and every walk-off. And with Vivid Seats Rewards, you'll start earning free tickets from your very first purchase. Buy 10 tickets, get the 11th one free. That's like getting 10% back on every ticket. From the box seats to the bleachers, Vivid Seats has you covered with tickets at great prices all summer long. So do this. Just visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Life happens live.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
My professionalism is never in doubt.
Great. The Dolphins are in trouble. The Dolphins are in trouble. Nah, 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 nah.
If you ever wondered about my status as a little brother, that right there was just like the little brother just skipping around behind his big brother, just absolutely joyous that somebody else is in trouble.
And see, I'm the older brother, but I have the appreciation for the younger brother doing stuff like that because I never have one. I have a younger sister.
Mm.
But I get the sense that anytime I was in trouble, you're in trouble. Wait till dad gets home. So I completely understand that whole deal.
When I was a kid, we'll get to the Dolphins in a second. America, calm down. When I was a kid, I used to take a Tonka truck, like those big metal Tonka trucks.
Mm-hmm.
When my mom wasn't in the room, I would take the truck and I would hit myself with it as hard as I could.
Why?
And then I would run into the next room and I would say that my older brother hit me.
Really?
And then she would come in and she would go full pizza paddle on his butt. I mean, she would just, because I'm not hitting myself with the Tonka. And the whole time he'd be like, he's hitting himself with it. And my mom was like, he's not hitting himself with the Tonka truck. And then what do you know, one day my plan was apparently foiled because my mom was sitting somewhere where she could see a window or a mirror, looked in the room. She saw me hit myself in the head with that Tonka truck, come running in. I'm telling you, I got the pizza paddle for that for quite a while. Like, I don't think I sat down right for a week.
Now, the biggest question I have is, at a certain point, when did you realize that you had gone to the well too often, hitting yourself in the head? You can do it once or twice and get your brother in trouble. Then you got to leave it alone. When you get to concussion symptoms and four or five times, it's going to be a red flag.
My brother always said when I was a kid, I had book smarts, not street smarts. I've developed a little bit more.
Or in this case, Tonka smarts.
Yeah, like, I don't think that I really thought that one through. Like, plus,
no.
You also got to look at it at some point and say, like, this racket's working. Maybe I'll save it, like, just spread it out. But no, impatient child.
Going right.
Doom. Oh, man. Doom. Oh, my God. I should have Tonka Truck as a nickname. It's Barton Hunt on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. Freddie Coleman, Jason Fitz, in for the guys. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you can hang out with us. And Freddie, yesterday, as you just heard in that rejoin, the Dolphins get one first-round draft pick taken away next year, and then a third-round pick in 2024. They lose $1.5 million, which I did the math yesterday, given Stephen Ross's current net worth, according to the Google, of $8.2 billion, is roughly the equivalent for most of us of about $9. So he was fined $9, a happy meal, let's say it that way, and lost a draft pick. We've spent a lot of time talking about the NFL and their findings and the Dolphins in this. But at some point, do we not have to look at Tom Brady in all of this too? Like, I understand that the team takes the punishment, but if the team texted you up, Tom Brady was the one that was like, yeah, what are you wearing? Like, and they're both in a relationship at that time. So I don't think that works from either side.
Yeah, I'm trying to make some sense out of this. So let me get this straight. You're going to punish the Dolphins to lose a first round pick. The owner is fined for tampering not only with Tom Brady, but also Sean Payton. But yet they've completely looked the other way, the whole Brian Flores thing. Essentially, what they've told us is that we're going to punish the security guard for being 5 minutes late to work. But the owner who's running the team into the ground, we're going to look the other way past that. Well, the security guard needs the money. He's got three different jobs. He's got a family of four. We're going to bring the hammer down on you. Meanwhile, Stephen Ross is suspended till October. So in other words, instead of watching the game at the stadium, he can watch it at home on his 100-foot screen TV where he can have people over and say, I should be there with my team, Jason and Freddie. By the way, how's the shrimps? You know, you guys enjoying the Orangina? Is everything working out good? I should be there with my team. The NFL is always going to go after the little person. They're never, ever going to go after a big fish. If there's somebody that has influence, and they've already gone through this, James, with Tom Brady. The last time they went after Tom Brady, they suspended for four games with the whole, as Ian Fitzsimmons, our buddy, likes to say, the immaculate deflation when it comes to footballs for four games. They went after the public outcry. They have never gotten over that. They've never forgotten about it. So who are you going to punish in this situation? You're not going to go after the big brother, Freddie Coleman. You're going to go after the little brother, Stephen Ross, and the Dolphins. That's why Tom Brady has been able to go over there and be scot-free, because they're not going to do that again with him.
I think it's funny. I just keep thinking of, like, Stephen Ross, like somebody comes in and is like, sir, you have misbehaved. We are taking your stadium away until October 17th. You cannot get in your stadium. You cannot see your friends till October 17th. And then Stephen is like, mama, like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Like, the fine is so nominal. I guess what I don't understand is, at some point, if you really want to stop cheating, and this is the same concept I have for college football. If you really want to stop cheating, you have to make the punishment punishments, the thunder of the gods to both sides involved. If we're going to be in a situation in college football, for example, where there are some proposals that are at least out there now that would allow unlimited transfers for students, we don't, that's not passed yet, but it's at least in the conversation, which means in my mind at some point it will pass.
True.
Well, don't we then, instead of just saying, well, Tennessee committed all these violations, we will punish the school. Well, what about the kid that took the money? And what about the coach that gave out the money? Punishment needs to start following the individuals that are responsible. So sure. If Tom Brady responds, like, I just keep thinking again of the, like, if the Dolphins are Cindy Crawford and they, you know, Cindy, dated reference, sorry, but Cindy Crawford slides into Tom Brady's DMs and is like, hey, you up? And he responds in that DM, is like, yeah, why do you ask? If Giselle sees that, he's still in trouble. Like, sure. The NFL's got to look at this Brady side and say, hey, you were part of whatever this tampering is. Like, you were a willing participant in breaking the rules, and we don't care about that? Well, like, it's weird to me.
Here's why it's weird. But it's how the NFL does business. When you have a bully pulpit and you're printing money, you don't worry about failing. Oh, you don't worry about those kind of things, Jason, because the NFL has seen time and time again, no matter what kind of dents the armor takes, the armor seems to be the next day completely fine. The NFL is the best version of Groundhog Day, to use movie references, that we've ever seen. They may have a bad inning of that day. They may fall off the roof. They may get run over by a truck. But then the next day, it's like nothing happened with the National Football League. So when you have that kind of stroke, when you have that kind of electricity about your sport, you don't worry about things in terms of people coming after you from a public relations standpoint. You dealt with enough public relations disasters in the National Football League that you know exactly what minefields to avoid and what minefields you can step over. Tom Brady's a minefield they do not want to put their foot on when it comes to the National Football League. They tried it one time. It didn't work for them. Stephen Ross is already enough trouble as it is. But they looked the other way on the real issue that they may have tanked football games. The Miami Dolphins, they found no evidence of that according to the NFL. But yet, they bring the hammer down on them when it comes to a first-round pick and a third-round pick. They just signed Tyreek Hill. They're worried about their quarterback, too, talking about not throwing fair catch balls in the regular season. This is collateral damage that the NFL can afford because they've done this time and time again, Jason.
We will get back to this later because I think you've made a really interesting point about whose side they didn't take in this, and that's Brian Flores. Also, I think there's an interesting reason why that's a mistake for the league. We'll get into that in a little bit. But obviously, we want you guys to weigh in on the punishment. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. There's only one place in the entire world of sports that you can consider losing a championship a rebuild. But it's unreal. You'll hear it next. We'll tell you about it. It's Barton Hahn on ESPN Radio. Freddie Coleman, Jason Fitz in for the guys.
Bart and Hahn.
We're taking care of business on Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Freddie and Fitz, that's what I'm going to call this from now on. Try the $45 Silver Unlimited plan from Straight Talk Wireless. Nationwide 5G on America's best network. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. 5G capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary. I'm Jason Fitz, hanging out with Freddie Coleman. And I said we were going to get to it later. We got to get to it now. We'll take your calls in just a second. I quickly, though, want to say here.
All right.
I said before we went to break that the Dolphins may, I think the league made a terrible mistake in not siding with Coach Flores when it came to their decision with the Dolphins.
Or at least having him be heard a little bit more.
Right. I'm not saying they had to come in and say everything was correct.
Sure.
But I would have given far more credence to it for one reason. Brian Flores has already told you that the most important thing to him is his reputation. Like, he told you he was willing to put all money aside by his actions. Actions speak louder than words. He told you that he's willing to do whatever it takes to clear his name of anything associated with the losing that happened there. And he's also shown us that he has documentation. I have a hard time thinking that he gave us the one written report he gave to them. Like, I'm going to presume he's smarter than that.
Yeah.
If I'm the league, that's not the guy I want to mess with. Because what the league depends on every single time is the, like, million-dollar man. Everybody's got a price. Right now, the league is facing two people, John Gruden and Brian Flores, that both have looked at it and said, look, and I'm not excusing what John Gruden said for a second, so don't at me, but John Gruden has made it clear that he wants every single email released. The league doesn't want that. Well, the league's not going to be able to shut John Gruden up because money's not going to buy him off. I don't believe that the league is going to be able to stop any of what Flores has to say right now because he's not scared of the ramifications. He doesn't want their money. He wants his name cleared. That is dangerous when you're looking at it from a league standpoint.
And real quick, the NFL wants to outlast people like Brian Flores and John Gruden. because that approach has always worked.
Mm-hmm.
They have enough resources and they have enough road that they can do that, banking on that you're not going to have enough there that you're just going to give up and you're just either going to settle or have it go away. The NFL has been able to operate that way when it comes to their business model because that business model has always worked. When you make that kind of money where you have all these valuable franchises in the billions, you know what kind of resources that you have that they don't have. They're hoping that this is going to be the case, not just with Brian Flores, no matter what happens with him and the Miami Dolphins in that situation, or John Gruden, who wants what he wants, and the NFL is banking on that. Even if you get it, you won't have enough to do anything about it.
Yeah, this is going to be wild, though, because when you're facing somebody that just doesn't care about any of the ramifications.
It's like fighting an ugly man in a bar. They have nothing to lose.
I'm usually that guy. All right, so it's Barton Hahn, Freddie Coleman, Jason Fitz. We'll take some of your calls. 888-ESPN. What am I talking about? I'm pretty. 888-729-3776. Bruce in West Virginia, thanks for calling the show. What are your thoughts on the Dolphins? What you got?
Well, I think it's kind of hypocritical that they're not going to punish the owner because part of the reason why they're never going to do that is because the person who's supposed to punish them works for them. That'd be like, you know, you do something and you expect your brother to punish you. Your brother's never going to punish you the way you should because he's done the same thing. So my question is, why don't the owners have somebody other than Roger Goodell handing down their punishment?
And thanks for the call, Bruce. And I mean, Freddie, I think the answer to that is that the owners don't really want to be punished. Roger Goodell makes $40 million a year for one specific job. And that is for all of us to yell at him when, in fact, all he's doing is the bidding of the owners that he works for to the point of Bruce, right? So, like, I look at some of that and I think, well, the owners aren't changing the system because they kind of like the system. They do whatever they want. They sort of get punished. When there's controversy, we yell at Roger. And we're like, go fix this.
Right.
When's the last time anybody looked at their favorite team's owner and said, I don't think the league's doing the right thing, and damn it, you need to make a change? We don't. We go straight to Roger Goodell. That's what he gets $40 million for. By the way, NFL, call me. I do it for half that.
Put it this way. Well, I do it for a quarter. You know,
lowball me.
I can live with that kind of money that my grandkids will be fine. So as long as that
all
goes.
All right, fine. $5 million, final offer, unless you want less than that, NFL.
Right, exactly.
I'll take it.
But to your point, though, Jason, because you're exactly right, that's why they pay him that kind of money. That's why Roger Goodell, remember how many times people said, Roger must go. Fire Roger. Fire Roger. You didn't hear one owner say that. Anytime the fans called him out, they wanted him. They wanted to put a stake through the heart of Dracula, known as Roger Goodell. You didn't hear not one owner on the record or anonymously saying, we got to get rid of that guy. He knows his job description. He understands that job description. And each and every year of the NFL draft, he admires the fact that people yell at him, and then those checks are regular, the first and 15th of the month, when it comes to Roger Goodell.
He's essentially the equivalent of the press secretary for the White House.
No doubt.
Like, he just steps up and he's like, yeah, we're doing this. And like, who is we, and how are these decisions made? Well, that's, you know, I want to talk to our crew.
Well,
like,
you know this from being in the music business. You have the best publicist in the world that can spin doctor anything to make sure you're not cast into a bad light, no matter how bad the cloud is around. You've seen these situations where somebody says, oh, blah, blah, blah. Hey, let's remember, their tour starts here. They're going to be fine. Everything's going to be dandy because they're counting on the fact that the more time elapses, that you're not going to be thinking about that anymore. It's the same thing in the National Football League. Anytime they have something happen, Roger Goodell's been out there. He's taking the bullets and arrows from anybody out there. And yet, the more time goes on, something else comes up. He's front and center. And the owners say, that's what we pay you for. And Roger said, that's what I get paid for.
And back to the point of, you know, what all this means. When you start to looking at guys that are fearless and taking on the league, they'll have the opportunity to make information public. That's the best thing anybody can do in this process, is make information public. That being said, I have to remind everybody, I don't know if you saw this, but according to Front Office Sports last week, the NFL last year generated a new record of $4.4 billion. That's with a B, $4.4 billion in ad revenue for its media partners. It's 14% increase over the 2021 season. Of course, they added an extra game. $4.4 billion. So for everybody that's looking at this Dolphin situation saying, oh my God, tanking, how could they? $4.4 billion. If everybody's looking at Deshaun Watson, how could they? $4.4 billion. I'll go all the way back, as uncomfortable as it makes everybody in the world to hear the words, when everybody started saying, oh, you kneel for the anthem, I won't watch your football anymore. $4.4 billion. At the end of the day, you're still going to watch.
Yeah, because you can say that out loud for whatever agenda that you had back then or have back now. we know in play they didn't like to talk about at parties that you're watching the NFL or you're streaming the NFL and consuming the NFL. People are always going to be more demonstrative when something they don't like compared to something that they do. If something has gotten under somebody's skin, when something that they like, they just hold it to their bosom. The NFL knows that you got them close to their bosom. You got it close to you right there. And as long as they continue to provide what you want to see, they're going to keep making that money time and time again.
$4.4 billion. All right. When is losing a championship such a fail that a head coach will sit on a show and call it a rebuild year? I cannot believe we're going to do this, but you're going to hear that next from one of the biggest names in college football.
Bart and Han.
Freddie Coleman, I'm Jason Fitz. We're the much better looking version of Bart and Han.
Oh, really?
Hanging out with you. I'll say it.
Okay.
They're not in the room to take me down. ESPN.com asked 50 ESPN NFL experts, reporters, and analysts to vote for the GOAT at each position, then went back to a handful of people on the panel for reasonings and explanations. It's really cool out on .com. Go read it. These GOAT debates just frankly get everybody fired up.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback, GOAT, Tom Brady, 44 votes. I am a little surprised that it's 44 votes for Tom Brady. And then 4 votes for Joe Montana, 2 votes for Peyton Manning. Like, I know there's a real and reasonable argument for Tom Brady to be the best of all time. Uh-huh. I guess I just thought more highly of Joe Montana because of my childhood.
Well, I'm surprised Joe Montana got more votes than Peyton Manning. I mean, Tom Brady, we know that he's retired that award when it comes to greatest of all time at the quarterback position. But I thought for sure Peyton Manning was going to be number 2. The fact that Joe Montana got double the votes of Peyton Manning, I think people forget how great Peyton Manning was. And that's Tom Brady's fault because he's still playing. He's going to be 80 years of age, Jason. They're going to wheel him out there in the wheelchair. Uh-huh. He's going to be throwing 45 touchdown pass because you can't touch the quarterback. he's put Peyton Manning in such a way back machine that we forget that Peyton Manning changed the quarterback position and Tom Brady has revolutionized to a different level. But Peyton Manning was that great. But we forget about that because Tom Brady is still playing.
Yeah, there was a GOAT argument every time the Patriots faced the Colts.
No doubt.
One of the beautiful things about that, though, where you had two teams that were always in first place in their division. Mm-hmm. So you got non-division rivals playing each other every year at the top of their game. That's so hard to replicate because it would take dominance. For example, in this era, the Bills and the Chiefs would have to continue to win their division every year for a decade for Allen Mahomes to become as significant as Brady Manning was. But at the time, Brady Manning, every single time they played, was like, is this the battle of the goats? And now it's not even, it's like, it's a goat and a sheep.
Because it never was a passing of the torch. Because when the Cowboys were great, then the Packers came up, it was a passing of the torch from the Cowboys to the Packers and Brett Favre when they were able to do their thing. It was never like that with those two. Because once the Patriots got started, Peyton Manning had just been in the league right around 1998, and you knew the Colts were going to be good. So they had to go through each other, and they were always terrific at the same time that it was never a case of, okay, when you get too old, we're going to take over. They were taking over the NFL because they were in the same weight class when it came to Tom Brady and Peyton Manning.
It's the GOAT conversation is just always interesting in the sense of perspective rather than get fired up about who's actually the GOAT. I think it's a chance to go back and look at some of the greatness of certain players. There is one player I don't think belongs on this list at all, and it's a controversial hot take. Ooh. We'll get into that later because his name is Randy Moss. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm taking Randy Moss completely off the list, all the way. No votes for me. I'll tell you why later in the show, just because I like firing people up.
Wow. You realize Randy Moss is a co-worker.
Bart and Han.
It's Bart and Han on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. And, of course, on your smart speaker. Presented by Progressive Insurance. Freddie Coleman, Jason Fitz. Freddie and other Fitz. In for the guys. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Although, Fitzsimmons is really other Fitz because he has more to his last name. My last name is just Fitz. So
that's true.
I think he should be called like Simi instead of Fitzy. Like, why does everybody with like Fitzgerald?
You don't
Fitzgerald,
have enough money in your pocket to call him that.
Simi. I mean, like Fitzgerald. Why is that always made into Fitz or Fitzy when it's like, make it Jerry or something? I don't know. Like, I'm only Fitz. Yeah. So, like, I.
You don't have enough money in your pocket to have that happen.
You know what? Ian, we've decided here it's going to be Freddie and Simi from now on from 9 p.m.
Oh, really?
To 1 a.m.
Oh, I can't wait till Justin Craig, our boss, hears about this. All the marketing's got to be changed. We can't have that in the cups anymore.
Look, Ian, you can't come after me because my co-host is Sarah Spain, and my co-host can beat up both of you. So there we go. I've got...
That's like pouring water in a drowning man with Ian.
Well,
as many foot and leg injuries he's had, come on now. That's really not fair. Oh, man,
we're going straight wrestling there. I'm going straight for the leg. I'm sorry, Simi. I didn't mean to do that to you.
For a leg.
Oh, he's
going
to send me a text later. All right. speaking of sending a text, I need to send Nick Saban a text about expectations. Like, I think sometimes appreciating greatness is difficult in the moment, and the standard of excellence that's required to be great is so daunting that anything less than perfection is not enough. And again, I know I go back to my music so much sometimes, but like when I was a kid at Juilliard, there was a competition I won at Juilliard. Should have got a gold medal. I did not. I got a silver medal for it, and they came back and they said my performance was not gold medal worthy. So even though I won that day, it wasn't gold medal. I understand. I grew up in a world of absolute perfection is the only way that you can ever live.
Got it.
I understand it. But to call a season where you lose a national championship rebuilding is stunning. And that's exactly what Saban did when he said this.
Last year we had kind of a rebuilding year.
What?
So we should have 9 starters back on offense, 9 on defense, but 6 guys go out early for the draft. So now we have 5 back on offense and 7 back on defense. So that in and of itself creates a few more question marks, but it also creates opportunity for other players to be able to shine in the program and contribute in a positive way. So nobody knows for sure how all this stuff's going to sort of come to fruition, but that's the part of the excitement and challenge that we have to try to develop a team.
I'm shooketh all the way to my...
Shooketh. I like
you that. Lost a national championship. You have a Heisman Trophy winner, a quarterback. I don't even know how to process that.
You don't process it because that's Nick Saban's way of sending a message to his team. Because with Nick Saban, remember the old line from Pat Riley when he used to coach the NBA, there's winning and there's misery?
Mm-hmm.
That's Nick Saban 2.0. That's Nick Saban 21st century. There's winning a championship or there's misery, especially losing to a team in your conference. I guarantee you, and this is just me spitballing, Jason, there are plenty of Alabama players that did not think they were going to lose to Georgia in the national championship game, especially when people did not think that Alabama was going to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game barely a month before that. So Nick Saban knows the pulse of his team. Those guys in that locker room saying, I can't believe we lost to that football team. We should have made it 2-0 against them. We should not have allowed Georgia to beat us. We don't care what they did in the fourth quarter. I guarantee they believe they let that game get away, that they lost it more than Georgia won it. And believe me, God, Nick Saban, he will use that as a motivating factor to make sure they don't have that happen to this team in 2022.
And that's why he's Nick Saban, right? That's why Bama, the standard is the standard, right? Like, we all understand that level of excellence. To your point, I was around a couple of Alabama football players earlier this summer, and I asked them how long it took to get over the national championship defeat.
Yeah.
And one of the guys looked at me and he's like, no time, a day, because we knew we were the better team. They only beat us because we were hurt. Like,
really?
There's a level of swagger and confidence to Bama this year. And a level of, like, I don't know, the best I can say from the guys I was around is a level of, like, up yours if you don't think that we're capable of winning everything this year. Like, and Bama's mad, and I get that.
Yeah.
But this is, like, at some point, and I understand the concept of, like, we didn't win a championship, so that's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But to frame it as a rebuilding year is a little bit like when Vandy steps up at the SEC championship or SEC
with
media
Coach
days
Lee.
And says, you know, Coach Lee says, well, we're going to be contending for SEC championships. Like, I don't know. I snort laughed. I had like,
well, they are in tennis.
Baseball.
Baseball,
Jim Corbin,
no doubt.
Keep crushing it, Corbin.
Exactly,
like, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Doing great work.
Baseball and tennis. Football.
Doing God's work in the other sports, but not so much.
All we need is a tambourine.
Oh, my God. Well, I think the concept of rebuild and then an explanation of why they weren't good enough.
Sure.
Is such an interesting part of what makes Bama, Bama, right? And to that end, I think, you know, identity is so key from a coach. Like, one of the great things about college football now is if you respond, like, I responded to those types of teachers. I wanted somebody that was hard on me. If you respond to that, you know where to go. If you want somebody that's going to be your best friend,
yeah.
Then Clemson, you know where to go. Like, coaches now and their personalities have to be so caricatured all year long because you're constantly not just making a sales pitch to the guys in the room, but you're telling everybody outside the program, this is my identity as a coach. And if you want to play in the NFL, you want to win national championships, you come to Alabama. You want anything other than that, don't waste my time.
Here's something else. He was also sending a message to Georgia. And what I mean by that is, that's his way of saying, you're going to know how we feel. We have been the hunted for so long since Nick Saban's gotten here. People forget that Alabama, their first year, was 6-7. and lost to Louisiana Tech the first year of Nick Saban. That's the kind of standards that he's been able to create for the program. He's sending a message saying, hey, Clemson knew what we went through, and they still won national championships. Got the SEC, they got the ACC championship game, got the national title game. This is the first time you guys won a national championship since Vince Dooley was the head coach and Herschel Walker was the running back as a freshman in the early 1980s. Now you're really going to get everybody's best shot because you got that championship belt. We've gone through this. So to us, this is rebuilding. We want to see how you handle this hangover because everybody's glad handling. Kirby Smart, he got that stimulus package from the Georgia Athletic Program to be there forever, having that forever contract. But now for the first time ever, well, since the 80s, Georgia's going to know what it's like to be Alabama because they're getting everybody's best shot because they're a champion, not just an Eastern Division champion or winning the Citrus Bowl. They got the big belt around their waist.
And that will come with all the pressure. If they beat Alabama this year, the SEC will look different for the next decade. All right,
yeah.
Coming up next, will the NFL appeal the Deshaun Watson decision? We will break it down. Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio. Freddie and Fitz in for him.
Bart and Hahn.